Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m., 7 p.m., and Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We also link to our guests' websites so that you can get the information that you need from them directly. I use the analogy, we do not reinvent the wheel. It's already been done. We're just a portal to that respective wheel, if you will. And we're very excited today to have Dr. Jamie turned off. She is referred to as Dr. Love, has her own radio program as well. And we're talking about love never dies and how to reconnect and make peace with the deceased. And Dr. Love, Dr. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Oh, so happy to be with you.
The aspect of conversing with the deceased, those who've transitioned, whatever term, those who've died, however you want to phrase it, we seem to be going in phases, at least as far as I'm aware, where there's a period of time where people are really interested in it, then it kind of fades away, and then it comes back again and so forth. What is, from your observation, what is the... what is the reason why we're so in need, if you will, and maybe that's the best way to put it, of communicating with those people who have, if you will, gone on before us?
Well, it's because there's so many reasons. The people in spirit form are our spirit guides. They're also here to help us fulfill our personal destinies and our own spiritual growth and development. They're here to support us and hold our hands as we travel down the bumpy road called life. And they're here above everything else to just remind us that we don't die and love never dies. And, you know, I think if I tell a little bit about my story, then it sort of will answer your question. Would you like me to share a little bit about it?
Well, yes, I would, because and that was actually going to be my next question, is what was the catalyst that brought you to, and do you communicate with your departed loved ones as well?
Of course.
Okay. So tell us how this all got started.
All right. So it all started this way. And it's so important that I give the background for your listeners so that they realize a marvelous aspect of my story. So when I was a young girl, I had a premonition of the guy I was going to marry. I actually saw his face. I saw his body. I saw him fleshed out. And so I just said, I'm going to wait till he appears. I'm not going to date. I'm going to wait. And he actually did appear on the first day of my freshman year at Vassar College. I'd been shut out of all intro sociology classes, and I really wanted to take sociology. So I went to the secretary of the department, and I said, what can I do? She said, go ask the department chair, Jean Pin, if he can find a seat for you in one of the closed classes. Well, Richard, the minute I stepped into Jean's office, I had the first and only out-of-body experience of my life. I literally felt my soul shooting at high speed through a tunnel to the end of my life. And when I returned to my body, I got this message, remember every aspect of this meeting, he will be everything to you one day. Now, this was an extraordinary experience, and then I forgot about it and went about my life as a student at Vassar. Now, I have to say that right after meeting Jean, I learned that for most of his life, Jean had been one of the most famous Jesuit priests in history. He had taught at the Vatican. He founded a movement called Liberation Theology, designed to fight church oppression from within. And he actually launched to international fame when he publicly opposed the Pope and the Catholic Church as they were trying to block the legalization of divorce in Italy. And he was a radical feminist Jesuit priest. He didn't want to see women trapped in marriages where they were being abused. So he fought on the grounds of religious freedom. The church should butt out of the private sector. He won. He got the divorce bill passed and changed the course of Italian history. And soon after, the Pope granted him the dispensation of his vows so that he wasn't excommunicated. He left the Jesuit order and the priesthood, and he was recruited by Vassar, where he had served for 10 years on the day that I met him. Now, everybody needs to know my background is completely different than Jean's. I was raised by two devoutly atheist Jewish parents. The only religion my parents practiced was religiously hating each other's guts, and mine as well. So they taught me not to believe in God or the afterlife. We never went to synagogue. I never read the Bible. So my background was completely different from Jean's. Now, in the senior year of my studies at Vassar, I needed help with a statistical portion of my thesis. And I had heard that, among other things, Jean had been a very prominent statistician, having founded the Vatican's first and only social research center. So I approached him and asked him for help with my statistics. Even though he wasn't my advisor, he cheerfully gave me his time, and within a few weeks, we were clear. We were crazy for each other. We were like twins separated at birth. We were just soulmates. From that point on, we were inseparable for 27 years. Now, in the last year of Jean's bodily existence, we both started having a premonition that he was going to die of an accident. We just didn't know when or where it was going to happen. So we go on our final vacation to Italy, and one day while we're sitting on the beach in Italy, his hand was up over his head as if to block the rays of the sun, and suddenly a bee swooped down and stung his left hand at the exact location of Christ's stigmata. And then, Richard, I watched my beloved suffocate to death in front of my eyes from the bee sting. So I describe in Love Never Dies the absolute trauma of having him ripped from me in this way. I go back to my hotel room, and I'm lying on the bed, and I'm shaking, and I'm trembling, and I'm crying. And the next thing I know, I feel that man's hand stroke the entire length of my spine. And I sit bolt upright. I look over my shoulder. I don't see anything, but it was clear that he was with me, and he has been with me ever since. And Jean has made astonishing and ongoing manifestations to this day, often in front of witnesses, to prove to me and to prove to the world that we don't die, and therefore our relationships aren't meant to end in bodily death. And so as a result, I've created my groundbreaking new transdimensional grief therapy method that totally diverges from the Western approach to grief, which is grieve, let go, and move on, and do it in 6 months, or we're going to give you a psychiatric label and drugs. Instead, my method shows how to say hello, not goodbye, and how to do it without a medium, a channeler, or a psychic. And then there's just one more thing, because as a shrink, I know millions of people worldwide have unfinished business with those in spirit. And again, our Western grief therapy methods offers no way of working it out with those in spirit. So Love Never Dies shows you not only how to reconnect, but also how to make peace with the deceased.
This raises the question regarding what's referred to, the term I've heard, a crossing over. Now, this is not, crossing over in this context is not about the dying part. Supposedly, there is this transitional period and or space where they're supposed to then go into the light or go on to the next realm.
Yeah, all these concepts are our earthly conceptions.
Okay.
And it turns out it's not true, because one of the first things Jean said to me is, Jamie, death is an illusion. There's a very thin veil between the realm where you are and the realm where I am. The veil is thinner than you can ever imagine. I'm standing right here. And now we actually know from the quantum physicists' work that 95% of our world is comprised of what they call dark matter. And it is now believed that it's in the dark matter, really in our realm, that the spirits reside. So in fact, what Jean is saying in non-scientific terms is they're right here. They don't go anywhere. Jean said heaven is a state, not a place.
Yeah. I have to say, though, that as far as dark matter is concerned, I have a real problem with them giving something they cannot see or even track in any way, shape, or form, and saying that it's an integral part of the universe. And by the same token, as people say, well, you don't seem to have a problem with breathing the air, which you can't see.
Yeah, you can't see.
But you can track it. You can certainly, on a molecular level,
you know it's there.
You know it's there. I'm not trying to go down that road. It's just I always found that when I first heard the definition of dark matter and said, well, we can't see it, we can't really measure it, but we know it's there.
Well, because I'm not a scientist. I just know.
But they're also coming up
and
with...
And the thing is, it's like saying, how do you prove the existence of God, or how do you prove love?
Exactly.
You know, it's just, these are things you don't prove in the lab, although I know quantum physicists can explain dark matter better than I.
I love one of my guests years ago, he had him on and we were talking about the dimensions, the first, second, and third, and then there's the fourth dimension of time, and then there's the fifth dimension, and he began to describe to me the attributes of the fifth dimension. He says, in the first, second, and third, I can prove that those exist. I can show you evidence of the existence of the first, second, and third dimensions. I cannot show you evidence of the fourth dimension, but I can show you the effects. And then he
talked... Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. In the first part of Love Never Dies, mm-hmm. I really share what is evidence of what John is saying, mm-hmm. that he's here and our loved ones are here. Do you want me to share some of these stories with your listeners?
Please, before you do, I want to, first of all, would you please give out your website so that people can get more information about what you're talking about and maybe even make contact with you to follow up, because I know that there are people that want to do that.
Yeah, ask Dr. Love, askdrlove.com or drlove.com. I'm known worldwide as Dr. Love. It's so much easier than my last name.
I understand. So I'm going to let you go ahead and go into that description that we're talking about.
Yeah, so I would love to. So basically, Love Never Dies is broken into three parts. And the first part is the continuation of my memoir, my discovery of Jean's presence. So we'll do that, and then I can go on to the second and third part after, where I show people how to reconnect and make their own dialogue with loved ones and spirits. So I pick up on the night that I come home. I'll tell you about that. I came home and I'm alone in our bed for the first time in 27 years, and Jean is quoting something to me. I'm actually hearing him quote something. I have no idea what it is. I'll get back to that in a few minutes. The next morning, I come down to the kitchen and I hear Jean saying to me, "Jamie, open the kitchen door. I want to show you something." I open the door and I see a little chipmunk sitting on the step. The chipmunk is not acting the way a chipmunk normally would. He's frozen as if in a trance. He doesn't run away. He doesn't startle. And then I begin to watch him mimic my husband's bodily departure. He's literally taking his little hand and ripping at his little face, mimicking the way my husband was choking and trying to rip the oxygen mask off his face because the air wasn't getting into his lungs. And of course, I'm weeping as I watch the animal in this torment. And after 20 minutes of this, I see that chipmunk visibly cough up a wonk of mucus, and he's in peace. And I knew in this moment, my husband was telling me through this little animal, I have since dubbed animals, both domestic and wild, open vessels, because they are natural vessels through which spirit communicates with us. Mm. So he was telling me through this open vessel, I'm okay. Now, the next thing that happened was I had to fax Jean's death certificate to our phone carrier, Verizon. I had sent many multi-page faxes throughout the day, no problem. But when I went to fax his death certificate, the cover letter faxed without a hitch, but the death certificate hung up and wouldn't go. I tried with the obit. Again, cover letter faxes without a hitch, but the obit won't go. I tried 20 times. I finally give up. The next day, I take the papers to the lawyer's office. I don't say why. I just say, "Would you mind faxing these to Verizon for me?" I'm waiting and waiting, waiting and waiting. Finally, after 20 minutes, all the secretaries come out of the back room, and they're weeping. They said, "Jamie, we tried 20 times with the obit and the death certificate. Each time, the cover letter faxed without a hitch, but the death certificate and the obit would not fax. Your husband is trying to tell you he's not gone." So I go home, and again I have to fax the death certificate somewhere else, and again he lets the cover letter go, and the death certificate hangs up. So I stop, and I say to him, "I think you're hanging the death certificate up because I keep forgetting you're still here. If I promise to try to remember, will you let this go through in its entirety?" I cancel the fax, and I feel overcome with a tidal wave of love, and I realized it was my husband saying, "I heard you, okay." I reissue the fax, and it goes through in its entirety. So I'm starting to realize now pretty wild things are happening on a day-to-day basis, which I describe in part one of Love Never Dies. Strangers now are walking up to me and saying, "Your husband says, tell our story," and then they walk on. Now, one day around this time, I felt the need to pray to my husband on behalf of my friend Emily. Now, I was an atheist. I never prayed in my life, so that was already unusual. The prayer that I issued on behalf of Emily was, please help my friend Emily find love. Emily never met Jean. Jean never met Emily, never even saw a photograph of each other. I make the prayer, and I again feel that tidal wave of love, and I look at the clock on my dashboard. It's 4:58 p.m. That night, I get a phone call from Emily. She says to me, Jamie, you will not believe what happened to me. I said, what happened? She said, at 4:58 to be exact, I fell into a trance, and your husband appeared to me. She describes him to a T, exactly as he is. She says, he told me, to find love, follow the gray stones to the church in your neighborhood. Well, I was absolutely astounded that she was repeating the exact words of the prayer that I made to my husband. He was validating his presence, saying, I heard you, and I had to repeat the prayer. So a week later, Emily comes to the professional group I attend in the city, and she tells the story. When she gets to the part about having been sent to the church with the gray stones in her neighborhood, another member of our group named Mitch Wood, a former seminarian, says, what's the name of the church that he sent you to? And she says, oh, it's called the Claremont Church. Mitch Wood says, oh my gosh, the Claremont Church is New York City's only liberation theology seminary. Remember I said Jean founded liberation theology? So he literally put his stamp on that manifestation in so many ways. Now, I'm just going to give one more example. And this example involves what I call communicating with me through earthly props, which are generally electronic devices, phones, computers, this kind of thing. So one day I was in my closet. I was very upset. I was crying, and I'm thinking, I got to call my friend Anne. No, don't bother her. It's the middle of her work day. I'm hemming and hawing about this. And after about 20 minutes or so, in the distance, I hear my phone ringing. I pull myself up off the closet floor, and I go get the phone. It's Anne. She said to me, Jamie, did you call? I said, no, Anne, but I was thinking I needed to call you. She says, Jamie, my phone rang, and your name and number appeared on the caller ID. So we were so flabbergasted that somehow Jean managed to do this. Now, a year later, I have a really bad chest cough. I can't breathe, and I'm scared. I think I'm going to suffocate exactly the way Jean did. And so I say to him, I'm desperately begging you to prove that you're here with me now. Give me a sign of your presence. Do it now with the caller ID phone trick. Call my housekeeper, Donna, put my name and number on her display, and let me know you're here. 2 seconds later, the phone rings. It's Donna. She says, Jamie, did you call? I said, no, Donna, but I tell her that I asked Jean to do it, and she said, my phone rang, and your name and number appeared on the caller ID. So now I go to my writers group, and I tell all the stories of Jean's manifestations, and the head of the group, Gabe Davis, a devout Jewish atheist, says, you know, I sure would like to see that caller ID phone trick repeated, and this time I'd like to see whether your phone call log shows a record of having dialed out, even though you didn't use the phone. So I forget the challenge. A month later, I'm driving behind him and his wife, Robin, to meet them for dinner. And suddenly, as I'm driving at 5:45, I feel that tidal wave of love again. I look at the dash. I note it's 5:45. I get to the restaurant. Gabe comes out of his car, and he stampedes me. He says, Jamie, you won't believe what happened. What happened, Gabe? He says, at 5:45 exactly, my cell phone rang. I looked at the display, and your name and number appeared on the display. I picked up the phone, and a man's voice said, is Jamie there? Is Jamie there? He said the voice had an accent, and it prolonged the word there. Well, Jean was French, and he did prolong that word. It sounded like there. He said it wasn't a real call. The voice just faded away, and it never clicked off. He said, go get your phone and see if it dialed me. So I dig into the bottom of my phone, and sure enough, at 5:45, my call log showed that my phone that I hadn't used all day had dialed him. So the point of all these over-the-top manifestations is this. Jean asked me, right after he left his body, Jamie, tell our story. These manifestations, therefore, are for everybody listening, because as Jean also told me right after he left his body, Jamie, let our love shine like a torch that lights the path for others. So our story is meant to let you know, to let everybody listening know, that your loved ones are here with you too. They're just waiting for you to open the door of your heart and let them back in.
When we come back, we'll talk more with Jamie Dr. Love, Jamie Turndorf, and the author of Love Never Dies. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with Dr. Love, Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and we're talking about how love never dies. I think it's a clear message that we have talked about many times on this program. And Jamie, it's interesting because you've thrown so many things at me, and I've shared these stories a number of times when we've dealt with death and dying. In regards to a dear friend of my wife's and mine, he passed away in our home back in 2003. And we were at that time even planning our second trip to Ireland in 2004, late January of 2004. And we were actually going to invite him to come with us. He was that close a friend that we were willing to put on our credit card, the plane tickets and all of that. And he would stay with us in the bed and breakfast and so on and so on and so on. And of course, in October of that year, 2003, he passed away. Now, the circumstances surrounding his death have been perplexing for both my wife and I, because in spite of the fact that they told us that he was brain dead and they had him on life support and that they were going to take him off and they were going to harvest his organs, we knew of his history and that there was no way they could harvest his organs, because we knew that because of his history, his organs were damaged. And yet we never really had the kind of closure that said, oh, he's in the ground and we can go there and see his, you know, his gravesite and so on and so forth. And so we then speculated as to whether he even died. And maybe this was all part of the witness protection program because of a certain incident that had taken place a few weeks earlier, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we would sit there and muse about this and so forth. And then when we went to Ireland, we were on the island of Inishmore in the Aran Islands off the coast of Galway. And the night before, I'd had a dream, but there was no visual aspect to it. It was just audio. And I heard his voice say, "Don't say anything bad around Bridget." So there we are on the island. We're at one of these cemeteries. I think it was like the Seven Churches was the name of it. And I was off taking pictures of what I jokingly was saying, "Huh, here's the first wheel." It was this piece of stone that looked like a wheel, a little wheelbarrow wheel, as it were. And my wife comes over and says, "You need to come over here." Very serious. So I went over here. And she says, "You need to look at the gravestone." This was a slab of granite in the ground. And she says, "Read the gravestone."
It's his name.
Now, no.
What is it?
Now, my wife's maiden name is McDonough. I look at the gravestone, remembering the dream, and the name on the gravestone was Bridget McDonough.
Uh-huh.
To which I physically put my hand over my mouth and walked away. Now, my wife has had a couple of dreams either associated with or directly connected to him. One that has her very concerned in this present time. I'll share that with you off the air. But the point is, when someone like us does not have clear, shall we say, evidence that a person has actually passed on, and we want to know one way or the other. I mean, obviously, if, let's just say, scenario A, witness protection program, we don't want to create any problems there and get him into trouble, you know, and so forth, or put him in harm's way. And at the same time, he was such an integral part of our life. The man was teaching me about cars. I know very little. I'm not mechanically inclined in that regard. And I was real excited about learning. And he then departs, as it were. And he was a really good friend. He introduced us to a lot of neat things. And at the same time, it's like, man, I wish that we could have definitive closure. How do you address something like that for people?
Well, this is such an unusual example. You know, this is the kind of case where somebody has a loved one who's missing in action in a war, and they never find the body. So you have that sense of there's no closure. I didn't see the body. I didn't have an open casket. There's a similar kind of situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all you can do in a case like that is what I do on my Love Never Dies radio show. I have a show on Hay House Radio, and I help people from all over the world. I'm getting ahead of myself here because my transdimensional grief therapy method enables you. I show you how to reconnect with your loved ones and dialogue with them. So what you do in a case like this, and I've done this with quite a, you know, thousands of people over the last year or so, and I do it also in my home where I do Love Never Dies live and virtual retreats. I help people dialogue with their loved ones. So whether you saw the body or whether you know what happened, like it happened last night that I was speaking with someone and he said, I don't know what happened. I still don't have an answer. And instantly that loved one came through and said, I had an accident. Mm-hmm. You know, it was not a murder. I had an accident. So as we dialogue and we get better and better at sending and receiving energetic communications, we get the answers and we get the closure and we get to say goodbye to the physical body. So that's the best answer I can give you, that as we do it, it becomes clearer, we dialogue, and they come through to us. But I guess I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself here, because basically, before we can get to the, you know, the part three in Love Never Dies, where I show people how to make their own reconnection and establish a dialogue, we first have to tackle what I do in part two of Love Never Dies, which is help you overcome all the false beliefs and the false religious teachings that block most people from even getting to a reconnection. So would you be interested in having me talk a little
Please,
bit about that?
Go ahead. Absolutely.
Okay. So, well, the first obstacle that I hear all the time is the wrong belief we're not supposed to stay in connection with loved ones in spirit. And remember I said in our first segment that Jean was speaking to me on the first night I came back from Italy, and he was quoting something, and I didn't know what it was, right? Well, the next day I went to see his priest, who I had never met before, to prepare the readings for Jean's funeral. And I said to the priest, my husband is quoting something to me. And at first, the priest just raised his brow and just looked like this girl has lost her marbles. Then when I proceeded to tell him what Jean said, the priest blanched, he crossed himself, and this is what he said, and these are his exact words. Dear God, Jamie, at first I didn't believe that Jean was talking to you, but I do now. And then he told me that I was quoting an obscure biblical passage from the Communion of Saints. Like I would have known, as I said, I never read the Bible, I never went to church or synagogue. Jean and I didn't discuss religion when he lived in a body. So it took me a year to understand why Jean chose to quote that and only that biblical passage to me. Remember, he was a religious pioneer in life, and he continues to be in the afterlife. And what I discovered is the Communion of Saints says that our loved ones in spirit are one with or in communion with God and the saints. So this means the Bible is telling us, because we are supposed to stay in communion and communication with God and the saints, it means we're supposed to stay in communion and communication with our loved ones in spirit because they are one with God and the saints. So Jean's point is, what we've been told about the afterlife is dead wrong, if you will pardon my pun.
The pun, yes.
We are not supposed to live in an emotional wasteland, separated from those we love, waiting until we quote-unquote die and quote-unquote enter heaven. Because, as I said before, heaven is a state, not a place. Heaven is all around us. Heaven is here and now. So it means the Bible is telling us we're supposed to reconnect with our loved ones now. So that's a really big paradigm shift and a big misconception that needs to be revamped. Now, another one that really blocks people from reconnecting with their loved ones is, and I hear this very often, well, reconnecting prevents you from moving on with your life. Now, it turns out this is the exact opposite, because what I see, and I've been seeing this with thousands and thousands of bereaved people. When you don't reconnect, you're basically wallowing in grief, and you are not entering your life. You're just miserable and stuck. And what I see every week on Hay House Radio, on my show, Love Never Dies, is people reconnect, I help them reconnect, and their grief transforms to joy immediately. Same thing happens at my Love Never Dies retreats. They reconnect and the grief transforms to joy. So then we're able to more fully enter our lives and be present in our lives. Now, another really big misconception we have to let go of is the idea of, oh, if I reconnect with a loved one in spirit, especially a life partner or spouse, well, then I won't be able to love another person. Well, that's like saying to a mother, do you love your first child? Yeah. Well, then you can't have any more because you can't love more than one. Well, our hearts are made to love. We have plenty of room to love all those who walk the earth plane and all those who are in the spirit plane. Now, another biggie that people have got to ditch, this misconception, is, oh, we're holding them back from performing their holy work. You know, we're preventing them from moving on. Well, all I have ever heard from Jean and from every spirit being that has spoken to me, you know, and with me, you know, through my clients and the Hay House Show, is they'll say, what else is there for me to do? It's my full-time occupation to love you. Our loved ones in spirit are here to support us and guide us and be our spirit guides and hold our hands as we travel down the bumpy road called life. So that also is not true. Their work is to love us.
Yeah.
And the last one I'm going to mention, there's so many others in part two of Love Never Dies, but here's the last one because this is such a biggie. You're opening the door to evil. You'll hear that. Oh, the devil's waiting for you and this and that. So Jean, after he left his body, I found out that the Dalai Lama publicly prayed for him and said that he was one of the 50 men of all time who was one with God. Jean never spoke about devils and evil ones and dark ones. It didn't even exist. And if a man who's one with God is telling you there is no devil or dark forces, then I am going to say there is no devil and dark forces. I've never experienced anything of the kind. But above all, our loved ones in spirit are our gatekeepers. They're here to protect us if there are any negative presences, which I've never experienced. And we also have something called an internal spiritual call blocking. That's what I call it. You don't want to take a call. Don't take a call. So that's the misconceptions that we have to let go of. And then in part two of Love Never Dies, I talk about the science, the latest science of how spirit communication is possible. You know, I talk about what we alluded to earlier in the show about what the quantum physicists know. But essentially, to just boil this down, to demystify this for everyone, what we're talking about is energy. You know, as Einstein said, energy cannot be destroyed. When we shed the turtle shell of our bodies, what's left is our energy. And that energy doesn't dissipate. And what we do when we communicate with loved ones in spirit is we send and receive energetic signals. And human beings are energetically communicating all the time. We do it every day. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about, you stop at a light and you look over at the driver in the neighboring car. Doesn't that driver always look back at you? Because he senses the energetic frequency of your gaze. Twins know when the other's in trouble, even when they live on opposite ends of the world, because they sense the energetic signals that are being sent and received. So basically what I do here is I demystify the process and I teach you how to tune to what I call the spirit channel in your brain so that you can send and receive energetic signals back and forth. And that's what part three of Love Never Dies is about. I show you how to establish your own connection with those in spirit without a medium, a channel, or a psychic. And since we're all born with this innate ability to communicate with spirit, because it is nothing more than sending and receiving energetic signals, I teach you how to tune your brain to the spirit channel. And this is not difficult. So the first way that we do this is by creating what I call a state of receptivity. Now, I teach you what Jean showed me. The first thing he said to me was, Jamie, the noise of the day drowns me out. So anytime you want to hear me, just come to the bed, be still and quiet, and you will hear me. So in this chapter of part three of Love Never Dies, I show you how to find pockets of peace, how to sit in silence, turn off the TV, turn off the music, find a peaceful practice that works for you. I show you also a breathing exercise because Jean showed me how to reconnect with him using a particular breathing method. And then I show you how to surrender to all your emotional states without getting too upset. Because if we're too upset, then that blocks the sending and receiving of energetic signals. And then last but not least, to create a state of receptivity, I show you how to open up all your five senses, because spirit beings are pure energy, so they can energetically send signals, and they do send signals to all of our senses. And the more our sensory receivers are turned on, the easier it's going to be for us to perceive the signs that they're sending to us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now the next thing is recognizing the signs, because I can't tell you, Richard, how many people write to me or call me on Hay House and they say, Jamie, you really pissed me off because I'm not getting the signs you're getting. And invariably, when people read Love Never Dies, they see, because in the chapter I'm recognizing the signs, I categorize all the signs of spirit presence, and everybody will say to me, oh my gosh, I didn't realize it, but that happened, and so did this, and so did that. So for most people, just becoming aware of the signs is sufficient to begin the process of reconnection, because again, freed from the human vessel, spirits send an infinite number of signs to us. And signs are infinite, from sounds to animals behaving oddly, like the chipmunk story, to strange sensations, to drafts, to temperature changes, to chills, goose flesh, symbolic communications like butterflies and rainbows, and then also coins. They love to send pennies from heaven that were minted on the year that was significant to us. And I have a really fun story about this. It was with a patient of mine named Kyla. She was in my office, and I said to her, you know, this is the anniversary week of Jean's bodily departure, and he always drops coins on me as a sign that he's aware of what the week is, and these coins are always minted on the year that he left his body. So Kyla blinks, and she says, oh my gosh, Jamie, look at my cowboy boots. I almost forgot. They were off my feet when I was in my bedroom this week when I saw a coin careening from the ceiling and landed in the boot, and I got the message that it was for you, and I forgot about it. I never took it out. Let me give it to you now. So as she takes her boot off, I hear Jean say to me, you'll see, it was minted in 2006, the year I left my body. Sure enough, it was. So now here's the thing I want to take us to the next place, because at this point, Love Never Dies brings spirit communication to an entirely new place. In fact, the CEO of Hay House said, we've never seen anything like what you do next. Because what I show you to do now is to establish a dialogue with your departed loved ones in order to reconnect, to obtain guidance, and even to heal unfinished business and make peace. So what I show you how to do is to bring the signs to life, so that you can use them in a back-and-forth communication using signs, using human and animal open vessels, and using earthly props, which are those electronic devices, and how to use all of this to facilitate a back-and-forth communication. So would you like an example of the difference between static signs versus a back-and-forth communication with the help of signs and earthly props? Would that be helpful to you?
I think it would be, and I just want to, before you give us those examples, remind our listeners, you're listening to Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. She is the Love Doctor on Hay House, and she has a book out called Love Never Dies, How to Reconnect and Make Peace with the Deceased. And before you jump into those examples, you've raised a lot of interesting things, and speaking of signs, you know, I mentioned the audible dream that I had with my friend, but I also had one many years ago, probably in my, I'm going to say in my early 20s, and it was one where I was driving a white van on the freeway, going past this forest, and I turn on this road into the forest, and the light is coming through the mist in the forest, through the trees, and I come upon this giant meadow, and blue skies abound, and there's this brick house with arched windows. And I go inside, and there is my departed grandmother. And she doesn't say a word. This was the grandmother on my mother's side, who I was very close to. And she just gives me a hug, sort of as a reassurance. Now, on the face of it, it's not a real remarkable story. But what you need to know is, because I've shared this story with our listeners many times, at the time I had the dream, I was legally blind and could not drive. I tried, like you wouldn't believe, to try to get a driver's license through the DMV in Arizona, but I wasn't driving. And then After I married the second time, my parents gave me their white Dodge Caravan. And I was driving that around, and the dream came back to me.
Right, right.
And was that a premonition? I don't know. All I know is that it was a great dream, and I still remember it rather vividly even to this day. I was even driving a white van, not my parents this time, but a white van. It was a rental. Across the desert from Phoenix to Santa Barbara when my second wife and I moved here to Santa Barbara. So, and we drove up the Highway 154, which at one time was forest, to where we live now.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like, wow. I mean, the coincidences, as I pronounce them, pronounce the word,
right.
Abound. There are no coincidence.
That's right.
Because
it's a way of remaining anonymous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So let's go ahead and dive into what you wanted to elaborate on the two various examples of...
Right. I was going to show the difference between static signs versus dialoguing mm-hmm. with our loved ones in spirit with the help of signs, human open vessels, and earthly props. So here we are. It's the anniversary week of Jean's bodily departure. I go to the chiropractor, and I'm alone in the office, and I'm speaking with Teresa, the secretary. And I say to her, so Teresa, this is the anniversary week, and Jean's dropping a lot of signs on me. With that, I smell gardenias. I do not say a word, Richard. I just smell it. And all of a sudden, Teresa says, Jamie, do you smell gardenias? I said, oh, Teresa, that is fantastic. Jean is dropping a sign on both of us. The scent of sanctity. Now, signs are static. They just drop them on us like they drop coins. Now I go home, and I tell this story to a patient of mine named Regina who desperately needs to reconnect with her sister in spirit. And I tell her the story about the scent of gardenias. Now, as soon as I say that, Richard, I hear my husband saying to me, but Jamie, I wish I could give you roses. Now, at that moment, Regina pops up off the couch, and she says, Jamie, do you smell roses? Now, in that really elegant manifestation, Jean was dialoguing with me with the help of my patient, using her as a human open vessel. He was confirming, you heard me right. I said I wanted to give you roses, and then I put that thought and that scent in her apparatus so that she would say it back to you so that you would know you heard me. You heard what I was saying to you accurately. So now I want to give another example. It's a really cool example that involves human open vessels and earthly props. It was the week of Valentine's Day, and I had just done the Coast to Coast show, and Love Never Dies became an overnight bestseller, and it sold out on Amazon. And the next day, I get a call from a guy who said, your husband is burning up my brain with messages for you. I said, okay. So he starts to tell me stuff in French and Italian, and I know that my husband is using this guy as an open vessel because the things he's saying are things Jean used to say to me in French and Italian. And then the guy says to me, but Jamie, I'm a hillbilly. I don't know no Italian. So I said, dude, I believe you. Your accent is really bad. So then a couple of days later, it's actually Valentine's Day. And the guy calls me back and he says, you are not going to believe what happened. What happened? He said, I was sitting in front of my computer this morning with my hands on my lap, not touching the computer, when I hear your husband say, send Jamie the photo of the peach-colored rose. He said, with that, a photo of a peach-colored rose opens up on my computer. He said, and the caption of the photo said, peaches and cream. Now, first of all, nobody in the world knows, not only did Jean give me roses every week, they were peach-colored. And the night before, when I was talking to this guy, he said to me, your husband wants you to know your time is now. To which I had said, my husband used to always say to me, the cream always rises to the top. So there it was, peaches and cream. So the point here is, in this section of Love Never Dies, I show you how you can establish a direct dialogue to obtain guidance, to say farewell to the physical body, to... If you are, and this is the most important thing, if you're one of the millions of people worldwide who has unfinished business with someone in spirit, now I show you how to do a direct dialogue to work out the unfinished business. So we can speak out loud, and I show you how to do this, and how to journal about it, and you speak your part, and you speak the other being's part, and you talk back and forth until you resolve your issue. And the thing I want everybody to know, which is so encouraging, is we traditionally have thought, well, if somebody leaves this body and it wasn't worked out, you're SOL, it's too late. And it turns out it's the exact opposite. Often we have to wait until somebody leaves his body to work it out because in spirit form, they get how they messed up with us. They see what they did wrong. And I discovered this the first week after Jean left his body when I went to go and do the car repair thing. And Jean always did it. They didn't know me. I introduced myself to Debbie, and I say, Jean just left his body. She says, I'm a widow myself. With that, Debbie's husband in spirit starts coming through like gangbusters, and he says, tell her please to stop doing what I did with our son because she's creating the same power struggle. So I say this to Debbie, and she freaks, and she says, it's true. But the thing that struck me was that her husband needed to be out of his body to understand how he was making a mistake. Now, in addition to them knowing that they made mistakes, that makes it much more easy for them to work it out with us. I also discovered that they desperately want to work it out with us, and they need our help in healing the unfinished business we have. They need it for their own spiritual growth as well. And I discovered this on Good Friday. Jean sent me to Lainey, the bird lady's house. She was a woman who tried to help us save our bird, and it was unsuccessful. I didn't know her personally. I hadn't seen her in years, but I went. I walk into her bird breeding studio, and she points out a little Gouldian finch that is looking very bad. And she says, this finch will be dead by nightfall. It hasn't eaten in days, and it's so small, if it doesn't start eating now, it'll be dead. So I said, do you want me to help the bird? She says, if you want, try. So now I go over to the cage, and I am now energetically going to communicate with the bird. I'm going to speak aloud so Lainey will understand. And I say to the bird, go down to your seed bowl right now and start eating. The bird instantly obeys me, starts scarfing up seeds like a little mini vacuum. The more the bird eats, the stronger it gets. Now it's chirping and singing. At this point, I become aware of a spirit presence. And it's a woman. And I don't know who's in spirit or not, but it sounds like it's Lainey's mother. And she says, I'm so sorry. I was such a weakling, and I didn't protect you from him. So I say this to Lainey, and Lainey says, that's my mother. She always called herself a weakling. With that, I look down at the bird, and I see the bird is starting to look sick again and has stopped eating. And I'm aware that there's another presence that's making this bird sick. And I realize now it's Lainey's father in spirit. And all of a sudden, he says, I am begging you to confront me over how I molested you sexually. I can't rest until I know that you have made me face this. And I also need to know that you've worked this out because I know you're still scared and still traumatized. So I say all this to her, and she bursts into tears, and she says, it's true. I'm still a scared little girl. I'm still scared of him. We dialogue back and forth, and she works it out with him. So we often have to wait until they leave their bodies. That's so important. And then there's just one more thing I want everybody to know, because I'm so excited about this. I want people to realize that reconnecting with our loved ones in spirit is essential to help us fulfill our primary goal on Earth. Now, we all know we were put here for only one purpose, and that is to perfect our ability to love ourselves and to love others. I call this world our love lab. And I am living proof of how difficult it is to love oneself when you're raised in a family where you're being abused physically and verbally. And even though Jean loved me for decades, I still had a part of myself that was wounded from my parents beating me physically and emotionally. And no matter what I did, that part of myself didn't really heal. It tore me down. No matter what I did, it wasn't good enough. No matter how much success I achieved, I still didn't have the self-esteem I should have had. After Jean left his body, I went to my professional group in the city, and I was crying about this. I've got to master this. And everybody in the group, all a bunch of famous shrinks, said, well, just tell your parents' voices to shut the F up and this and that. That never worked for me, never worked for my patients. I come home, and I fall to my knees, and I pray to Jean. I'm begging him, please help me, please help me. I have to love myself. And in that moment, he appeared to me as the embodiment of love. He was surrounded in golden light. He took my face in his hands. He turned my face toward him and the light, and he said to me, Jamie, listen, listen, listen to me. Let my love for you fully enter you. And Richard, in that moment, I was healed. His love for me became my own self-love. And then I realized I had to wait until he was out of his body in order to receive this healing, because now he was freed from the physical vessel of his body. His soul, his essence, and his love could enter me unimpeded. So ultimately, connecting with our loved ones in spirit is our fast track to self-love. And as we let Love Never Dies guide us how to reconnect with our loved ones in spirit, and we let them heal every corner of us, mind, body, and soul, our hearts now become an overflowing well of love that we can then bring to the world. And that is Love Never Dies.
Well, I think that our folks listening to this program, I think, have certainly heard a great deal from you, and I think they've gleaned a great deal from you and can do more by going to your website, drlove.com, and we encourage you to check out.
Want a gift?
Go for it.
Would you like a gift for your readers? Yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Well, I like to give more than one gift. So when you sign up for my newsletter, you'll get the preface and the intro just to get you going. A lot of people do that because they don't want to wait till the book comes in the mail. Then once you do get the book, send proof of purchase to my webmaster at AskDrLove.com, and we will send you an exclusive unpublished video of a talk that I gave at the Bigger Game Expo where Jean made a manifestation that was captured on film.
Oh, wow.
Really fun.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Extraordinary. Well, I want to, first of all, thank you so much for taking so much time to share with our listeners and me about this whole aspect. I know that, at least I hope that this has helped folks to better understand from your perspective what, in a manner of speaking, what we can expect, not just from our loved ones passing, but even from our own imminent passing as well.
Yep, good point.
And before we let you go, two things. Number one, should you ever find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you come in studio to continue the conversation.
That's beautiful. I'd love to. Sure, I know. I know last week I had Reverend Beckwith on Ask Dr. Love Radio, and he said we're going to have you come speak at Agape, and I think that's not so far from you, is it?
Not at all. You're just down in Los Angeles, about an hour and a half away.
Yeah, so we'll swing something.
Absolutely. And then the second thing is, I have three final questions for you, as I do with all my guests. And the first one is, who is Jamie Turndorf?
Well, I'm just Dr. Love. This is my mission, to help people love themselves and love others. That's just all I am. My life is this work. That is it.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I just want everybody to know that our relationships don't end in death, and that you do not have to live in this emotional wasteland and suffer this pain. You can reconnect, and you can heal your unfinished business, and there's no need to wait to reconnect.
And who inspires you?
Oh, my goodness. My husband inspires me every day because he is just the living embodiment of love. He's just always there loving me, loving humanity, and just reminding me to keep opening my heart more to love.
And to that, what came to mind as you were describing your relationship, both pre and post, was the fact that you never seemed to have that moment where you really missed him because you were so in the first part of Love Never Dies
until I really, really made the reconnection.
Yeah,
I missed him.
Exactly.
And sometimes we do miss the physical body,
sure.
But when we reconnect, as I show you how to do, the missing dissipates and it's replaced by this incredible unearthly love, and you don't feel the lack.
Yeah.
when you make that reconnection.
That energetic connection is what it is. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Jamie Turndorf, thank you so much for joining us. Again, our website is drlove.com. Drlove.com is the website. We encourage you to get more information from her and take advantage of that gift. And again, thank you, Dr. Love, for joining us.
Thank you so much. I'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Absolutely. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.